This is tape recording number 5707C31-18ACC13. A lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard to students on the 18th ACC on the 31st of July 1957. The title of this lecture is Surprise, the Anatomy of Sleep. It is 60 minutes long. Copyright 1957 by L. Ron Hubbard, all world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by 8CO Tape Unit, St. Hill Manor, East Grinstead, Sussex, England.
Good evening. It's a very good thing that you've had a nice, relaxing day with nothing to do, because we have some things to take up this evening which will require a great deal of your attention, run your energy down a great deal. Therefore, I think it's a very, very good thing that you've had a nice, quiet day and you've not gotten anything done. You're not tired. I notice there are a few cases present of what they call upper indoc voice. This is a malady which occurs occasionally when students go into an upper indoc course, and it's just a matter of course if it's a little hoarse. It wasn't intended to rhyme. Now, I'll tell you a cure for upper indoc voice, if you care to have one. Cure number one, step number one, you get the effort necessary to restrain the student from yelling while coaching. The effort to restrain the student you are coaching from yelling. Now, you just get the effort to restrain him from yelling. Probably has nothing to do with your voice at all. See, nothing about the yelling you did. Then the second step is, whom could you reach with your voice? Make sure it's whom. We might have a Boston pre-clear on that, and he wouldn't understand who could you reach with your voice. You know? And this will clear it up nicely. And on the other hand, there's another way to clear it up. And then that's just flatten the process. What is this? This is lecture 13, isn't it? Lecture 13, 18th ACC, July 31, 1957. And the subject of this lecture this evening is surprise. And as soon as we get through with that, we will take up these questions. Now, surprise is the modus operandi, evidently, behind aberration, because the first thing that a thetan wants to have anything to do with, and as Jan Halpern once said, he mocks up a little black box and looks into the little black box to see if there's anything in it, and there's something in it, why he's surprised. In other words, he works out surprises on himself all the time. And what is a surprise? It's a change of pace. It's something one did not predict. Technical definition, a surprise is an occurrence which one did not predict. Got that?
Yep.
Well, that means an awful lot, because it means there's no future. You were busy predicting a future, and suddenly the future that you predicted was gone. That would make a surprise. You said, I'm going to sit here all afternoon, drink lemonade. Somebody comes in, gives you a birthday present. Well, you might have gotten a birthday present, but for sure you didn't get the rest of the afternoon drinking lemonade. You follow this? It's a change of pace. You don't get the having this you bargained on. Now, when surprises become insidious, something like a cannonball hits you in the torso and detorsos you. And you haven't got a torso, but it was an awful surprise. Death, of which I spoke to you in the last lecture, usually has bad repercussions only when attended with surprise. Gave an example this afternoon, fellow walking down the street in Washington, D.C., and he's hit with an Indian arrow between the shoulder blades, which kills him dead. Tightrope walker, once every matinee, twice every evening, he walks the tightrope hundreds of feet above the ground, thousands of feet, balances there on a hair trigger of nowhere, ready to plunge to his doom for the edification of the entire audience. He goes home, sits down in the kitchen, drinks a cup of coffee, and dies of glass poisoning. It's a surprise. He didn't predict it, but there it is. Change of pace. Now, an individual who has experienced many very arduous shocks gets to a point where he cannot change pace. He will not change pace. No matter what hits him, he will not change pace, and this is what we call no effect. Now, there's an experimental process that runs like this. You mock up somebody and have him experience a surprise. Go on and do it. I'm not going to flatten it. Just do it. Mock up somebody and have him experience a surprise. Good. Mock up somebody else and have him experience a surprise. Good. Mock up somebody else and have him experience a surprise. Were you able to have him experience a surprise the first time, or just go on about his business?
No.
He really got a surprise. Well, that means you're in pretty good shape. Now mock up somebody and have him experience a surprise. Do you see what's necessary to have him experience a surprise?
Surprise.
His future has to have shifted. Fellow's walking down the street, his future's the remainder of the sidewalk, but a coconut falls on his head and he only gets just that much sidewalk that he is lying on. You see this? All right, now, to those mock-ups you made, why, okay. Right. Fine. Thank you! Now, turn out of it, right present time. Look at the front of the room. All right, end of process. Now, it's all right with you if I ended the process that abruptly, isn't it? Yes, I knew it would be. Thank you very much. I mean, nothing like running a smooth session. This is a very important anatomy. We've known about this anatomy for a very, 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 very long time. But in an effort to explain what control is, it has become absolutely necessary, vitally necessary, to understand surprise, prediction, and change of pace. Do you see this? Vitally necessary. Because you're looking at the anatomy of control and why it works. Individual has been surprised. He's been surprised and been surprised and been surprised and some more surprised and some more surprised. And every time he got surprised, he resisted it one way or the other. There was a moment there that he resisted it. He tried for an instant, at least, to control it. No matter how tiny the instant was, he still tried to control what was happening if he didn't want to lose his mock-up or something of that character. So we find people who have had too many shocks, a serious sort of surprise, that's a shock, and other such things. We find people who have experienced too many of these with large ridges and warning systems and all kinds of weird things around by which they seek to do some controlling themselves, because those threw people out of control, didn't they? Well, wonderful thing to use those to throw people out of control. But the final result of all surprises is out of control. You notice when you're doing the mock-ups that you had your person go out of control, right? All right. Other words for out of controlness are hysteria, anxiety, fear, misemotion in general. Those are all out of controlnesses. Now, every time a person who has large numbers of these things stacked around finds that something is seeking to control him, he misidentifies the thing and he says, "This is the explosion that knocked my head off in 1812. It sought to control him too, you see. Control is very bad. In other words, anything that inflows must therefore be an incipient surprise. Something is going to surprise him. If he permits himself to be controlled, if he permits his no-effect ridge to be broken up, in other words, he is going to get a surprise, and he's not going to like it. All right. Why does tone 40, give me your hand, work? Why does tone 48C work? It is directly opposed to a game's condition and therefore should not work at all. But it works best on those cases which are way down south on the subject of games conditions and which have flipped. Works best on a flipped case. I talked to you about that the other evening. Every time they tried to make an effect, they are going to have a total effect on others, then they drop below this point. When they try to think of terms of effect, it's going to be a total effect on them. Well, you're looking at the same anatomy. You're looking at the mechanical anatomy of surprise when you're looking at effect and no effect and so forth. All right. Now, the individual is allergic to any effect because they are so surprising. And all these surprises add up to him to no havingness, which means no future. When you start to audit him with "give me your hand, thank you," or some such auditing command, or tone 48C, not consulting at all with him, he becomes quite sure that he's being controlled. He gets sure of that. And all of his resistances to control, which are the resistances to the masses and surprises, rise up and smite him, pass on through, dissolve. And their common denominator is stop. He's trying to say stop. Got that? So the more he's hit with, the more he conceives he must stop it. And the harder he tries to stop it. But eventually he discovers something very fantastic that he never noticed before. That you are simply asking him to extend his hand. And you've been doing it for some little time, and he is still alive, he still has a body, and he has a future. You, in essence, give him back all the future he has lost because of shocks and surprises when you control him directly. Then he can straighten out his own sights on this. He has been terribly fixated on past bursts and controls and upsets. And these past bursts and controls, upsets, have thrown him. He's gotten to a point where he says, nothing must come my way. Nothing must control me. I know what would happen if something started to control me. It would kill me. It would finish off the future. There'd be no more future. His immediate response to it is, stop. Don't do it anymore. You understand this? So, tone 40 overtly runs out these various miscontrols by simply putting a good control along the line. Therefore, the control has to be very good. Now, I'll tell you something amusing about this. If you freeze the process, you said, give me a hand, thank you, and whatever, auditing a man, and you then freeze the process, and you ask the preclear how he's getting along. If you catch him just after one of these re-stimulations has gone through, one of these interbulences, one of these out-of-controlnesses, he'll say, yes, he should continue. But let's say we keep on running it, and he starts to scream, or get upset, or get agitated in some way, and at a high point of agitation, we freeze it, and we ask him how he's getting along, and whether we should continue the process or not. He will tell us, no! No! Don't! He isn't talking. That isn't he. That isn't his motivation at all. You continue with a few more commands and get that particular peak level so that he's merely gasping or sitting there with a glassy-eyed brace. You ask him if he should be audited any further. He'll say definitely yes. That's him talking. Think it's doing you any good? He'd say yes. Now, it's very funny. You don't have to get these peaks very far down to get the person saying yes. Little tinny tin. Ill. Processing him. A second time. Properly open session. Processing, he started to go right on out the window. And processed me, he's going to go right on out the window. He was quite ill. And it was more or less at a peak, his re-stimulation. And I didn't have to argue very hard to get him to sit down, and then I started the process. And at 3 years of age, a few minutes deep in the processing, why, he said yes, he needed some processing. Yes, it was doing him some good. Not because he was propitiating. A little further along the line, he was crying at high C and very upset, and his fever fluctuating all over the place, and he said, no, he didn't want any processing. And on the very next command, again extended his hand, himself, all by himself, without any prompting, and did this throughout the process. Came down to a very interestingly high peak, that is to say, it came down to a high peak. He was crying very hard. And he slacked up just a little bit, and I froze the process, and I said, how are you doing now? He stopped crying. He said, I'm doing all right. I said, do you think I ought to keep on with the process? And he said, yes. So I said, give me your hand. And instantly, he went back into the same crying, see? After it was all over, he said that did him some good. In other words, he's perfectly aware of being controlled. And while he was in control of himself in any way, he was perfectly willing to go on with the process. But when he was totally out of control, he said no. In other words, he'd identified the process at such a peak with some old energy mass, some ridge, some experience. They would have called it back several hundred years ago in the days of Freud, several thousand years ago. They would have called it,
you're experiencing a psychic trauma.
When he's experiencing a psychic trauma, he didn't want any processing. But when he could breathe all by himself without something strangling him, just barely breathe, you see, he could barely get one eye out from underneath whatever was attacking him, he said, yes. That from a three-year-old. Older preclears are seldom this sensible. Now, the more shock there is on the case, the more frozen the responses. Now, how do you keep from getting surprised? Well, you could probably list a half a dozen ways of not getting surprised. Common denominator of all of them is control everything in the whole universe. And if you control everything in the whole universe, nothing is going to surprise you. There are other ways of getting sideways from control. One of them is being apathetic about everything, not caring what happens, so that nothing affects you in any way. That's a method of keeping from getting control. Any misemotion is a method of not being controlled. There's another method of not being controlled. That's not living. Very interesting method of keeping being controlled. But the common denominator of it all is under no circumstances can anything in the whole universe get out from underneath control. All right, somebody, we see a ball, kid's ball, rolls across the sidewalk. Right? Now, a person who is hyper-control, you see, has been surprised too much. Get the same thing, you know. Hyper-control, been surprised too much, same thing. This is the entrance point on all of this, is the Far South case. Catatonic skits is just rigidly no more surprises. All right, this ball rolls across the sidewalk. This super control case says, "Nyah!" Why? Why? Well, the ball is demonstrating that it is not under his control. Little kid runs in the room and says, "Nyah, nyah, nyah." The super control case says, "Nyah." I get so nervous around children. What's this nervousness? It's one of these ridge masses which had an out of controlness in it, and it's starting to throw him out of control, don't you see? So he sees something he doesn't control, he starts to go out of control. He just Q's and A's with it at once. If you wanted to make a person who would not control anything control something along the Pavlovian Russian Stanford University type of abuses, you could actually use this datum and advance their technology up to a point where at least some of it worked. And that would be something on this order. You would take a fellow who was going to control an awful lot of people, or who had to, or something of the sort, and you would get him walking along, and everything he touched would explode, except some things wouldn't, except some whistled. And you just give him large numbers of unpredictednesses, all of which had some jolt, and all of them connected with people in some fashion. And when you got through, he would be exhibiting what Homo sapiens call leadership. He would be obsessively controlling everybody. Hitler. On the Western Front as a corporal, this young Austrian upstart had a few too many shells land too close, had a few too many fellows blow up in his vicinity. And at the end of it, he had enough of it on the track, so that if there was anything in the entire world not under his control, it would have driven him berserk. Some 30 million human beings died because of Adolf Schickelgruber, but he was a great leader. Millions, 85 millions of people followed him practically to their deaths. There were people all over the United States saying, "Well, you can do business with Hitler. I don't know why we're going to war with Hitler. He'd probably do it all right for Germany. Great leader." This tells you how to handle a general, if you ever have to handle him. He's getting too uppity, getting too generalized. When you talk to him, just keep waving your hands in front of his face like this. Just use your hands lots. Speed it up. Get up above the motion of Italians, you know. And say, "Well, General, I tell you, it's like this." Well, so forth. At first, he'll just seek to tear your head off. After a while, you just sit back in apathy. And if you were to reach over and close his eyes, they'd shut. He said, if you're now a dog, bark. His next general order would be arf, arf, arf. Leadership. Leadership in Homo sapiens is based upon necessity to control for one's own safety and security. Therefore, we have a bunch of only ones in charge of the show. We give them an atom bomb and say, go ahead, blow our heads off. That's a good big surprise. That's the way to run governments. Go find all the has-beens that can't stand up to any more surprises and who get nervous every time a piece of paper rattles, and then put them in charge of all of us. That's the best way to do it. Only you never really find any leadership until an individual is capable of taking an awful lot of surprise. I mean, real effective leadership can't exist until somebody can stand up in two surprises. Because the whole business of being an executive is having surprising pieces of paper shoved under your face. Always, they're very surprising. Because people you have in organizations quite often specialize in handing out surprises. They dramatize them. Knock water coolers over. Get them to leak down into the files where all the precious documents are kept. And wonder how that happened. Hide the keys to the doors you're trying to get into. The fact that a president of the United States would look older at the end of his term of office demonstrates in the first place that he couldn't stand a surprise. It must be a terrible shock just to associate with the United States Senate. Be something on the order of being shot up with siege guns 24 hours a day. They consider as a high priority of business the appointment of the postmaster of Fairhope, Alabama. You see, that's the only thing that concerns them, because he, after all, he brought in his whole family, and he has 32 people in his family, and it means a lot of votes. These people think up all sorts of things in order to get attention. They find out the only way you can get attention is surprise hell out of somebody. There's a lot of shock connected with leading anything. This is for sure. An individual shouldn't be stiffly proofed against this shock. He should merely be able to handle it. He should be able to be surprised and still have a future. You see that as a necessity for any such activity. All right, you're looking at the common denominator of most of the blow-up reactions that you get on the part of PCs. Now, everybody's got a few too many surprises. It's not true that everybody's gone to a point where they have to control everybody in the whole universe before they themselves are safe. That's not true. But it is true that individuals, at any level, to some degree, keep a finger on loaded 45 automatics when they're in the room, you know, and just keeps a finger away from them, push them away. I remember a federal marshal came in waving one under my nose, and I pushed the muzzle away, took it away from him, put him back in his holster. I didn't like the idea of the thing being pointed at me, but my adjudication was fairly sane. The fellow was too nervous. He didn't know very much about guns. Well, now, if the muzzle had been pushed away with violence on a reactive level, he would have fired it. You see this? Well, you see a slight difference here. It'd be necessary to handle the things you handle on a line that will handle them. That sounds awfully simple, doesn't it? I mean, if you're going to handle something, handle it. Don't mis-emotion it. There's various ways of handling comm lines that handle things. You can extend a comm line in a certain direction, or put comm lines on certain vias that handle situations for you. It's no more than tactics and strategy. It's quite another thing to be totally obsessed on control, because you will not plan or plot a comm line at all. You will just try to get the other person to explode. They don't explode, so you explode. And that is the cycle of a of a rage or an upset or an apathy. See, you try to get the other person to explode, and he doesn't, you do. Well, he didn't explode because you couldn't communicate an explosion very well. If you're not allergic to surprises and not upset about surprises, you can blow his silly head off. You wouldn't get yours blown off. So it's quite the contrary. On the upper scale, a person could hand out surprises without much liability, as long as he could communicate. But if he couldn't communicate, why, any surprise that he tries to hand out will be a reactive one that he doesn't even know about, and then this surprises him, and he explodes. So we get the usual day of such a case would be something on this order. Gets up in the morning, decides he'll kill his wife, realizes he can't, cuts himself with a razor, goes in and starts to eat breakfast, decides he'll shoot the cook, realizes he can't do that, chokes on an egg. Get this? Little inverted cycle. The overt act becomes the motivator at once. Thinks he'll hand out a wonderful surprise to the office when he gets there, but that is, say, he'll drop a hand grenade in the floor. Doesn't have one. Instead of that, why, gets gas pains. This is the way it goes. This is the cycle of his day, hour by hour, minute by minute. It's enough for such a person to decide to surprise somebody some way or another and get awfully upset himself. Now, it isn't just a thetan that gets in this frame of mind. Actually, the body has enormous numbers of retained surprises of one kind or another, and a thetan can pick up a body that has a lot of surprises in it he doesn't know anything about. And then he starts wondering what's wrong with him, and this misowns the whole works. And after that, he's a complete wreck. He weren't his in the first place. Now, tone 40, with the extension of the hand, tone 48C, I like, blow up the bodies. Anti-surprise machinery. It blows up the bodies' reactions, as well as the thetan's reactions. But the body probably has thousands more than a thetan. So nearly every blow-up that you look at is a body blow-up. Then the thetan's liable to say, I wonder how come I blew up about this. Well, that's a misnomer. He didn't ever blow up about it. The body blew up, and he went out of an ability to control the body, and he had a hard time getting back into control of the body, and that's the usual cycle that occurs. Fellow who's dead in his head, of course, is just thinking of himself as the body. A body's reactions, his reactions, his reactions, body's reactions, that's all there is to it, and there's nothing you can do about it anyhow, because we all know we're men from mud. The men from mud. Hey, that's a good science fiction. The men from mud. Well, okay, you got this surprise pretty well taped. Now, use the phrase like counter control rather than control. You're not really controlling somebody with CCH1, CCH2, so much as you are counter controlling blow ups. The blow up is seeking to control, you control, and boom, what blows up? An individual is convinced that he cannot be controlled because everything, anytime anything controls him, one of these blow-ups starts to occur, you control him, and that's a counter-control. See? He finds out the blow-up didn't kill him, and he's still alive, and he can still function. That is, most of the time he finds it out. The divine doubt of whether or not the process works will enter your mind many times. We'll be processing some person that's been in an automobile accident, and all of a sudden they start to moan and scream. And it's obvious that the more you process them, the more they moan and scream. You say, well, I'm probably doing wrong. Undoubtedly, they're getting worse. If you were to put a thermometer in the hands of in the mouth of a sick man, you would put a thermometer in his mouth and so that you could watch it while you processed him. You'd see your processing taking his temperature right on down. Quite interesting. Usually a case of you knowing where to stop. Don't take it too far subnormal. 96 and a half is about as far down as you want to go on, something like that. Understand more about this now?
Yes.
Well, now this is the counter control process. An individual gets into this obsessed control simply because he dare not be surprised. You understand that? And his answer to never being surprised is to control everything. And this is irrational, and he can't have any fun if he's controlling everything, because he'll never get a surprise because he can't have any surprise. And we get one of these good old A=A equations going. Nice rat race. And the way you break up the rat race is to demonstrate to him with a control process that you can, that he can be controlled without serious consequences. Explosions run very bad 8C, and so he doesn't like them. You run good 8C, so he finds out that he can live. Okay?
Yep.
Here I have a few questions, which I will take up on this. Because they're sequitur, one or two of these. Here we have, what's the anatomy of sleep? Very stimulative subject. Now, we've talked all about the heady essence of surprise. And here we are, there's pills about sleep. Well, actually, to a large degree, they're the same subject. One can be surprised at night much more easily than one can be surprised in the daytime. The best thing to do is sleep through it. Body has lots of considerations about how it ought to have so much sleep and so forth, and you'll find the use of counter control with CCH1, 2, actually cut down the amount of time a person has to sleep. When a thetan cannot control or handle any part of anything, he goes aniten. Aniten and sleep are not quite the same thing. They're based on exactly the same mechanisms, however, but they are slightly different. Now, an individual originally had some other use for sleep. A thetan could put a body to sleep and go off and have a good time. Go down to Diddy Wah Diddy, that's 10 miles on the other side of hell. That's where the people in hell go to have a good time. Harlem Jive anatomy. Diddy Wah Diddy. An individual then had a use for sleep. And as a matter of fact, there are in the brain some little mechanisms that if you squeeze them or put a black spot of energy in them or something like that, the body shorts out. For a period of time, it shorts out. Actually, after a while, that becomes automatic. A person puts it on automatic, the body goes to sleep. A thetan thinking he is the body, why, after a while, begins to consider that he ought to go to sleep, too. He's totally dependent on the body for communication, so he goes to sleep, too. All of this in the ratio of confidence in controlling one's environment. It's very hard to control an environment at night, in the blackness and so on. And so why do anything but be totally introverted during that period? Actually, there is a cellular background to sleep, which is fascinating. Plankton floating on the sea is unable to get any sunlight during the night. And the sunlight storage, which it thinks it has to have, doesn't last all the way through the night. So you'll find people feeling pretty ghastly if you wake them up around 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, shake them up and say, come on, boy. And they don't. The body, evidently on the genetic line, has retained all the lessons of algae, plankton, monocellular behavior, And part of that behavior is when the sun is up, one can have some sunlight. Therefore, one can have energy so he can move around. And when the sun is gone, one doesn't have any more energy, so one shouldn't move around. And you can turn on in most preachers, you can make him find around the body horrible facsimiles of dark, dark night, little algae bobbing on the sea, and horrendous waves coming up, and some shore with the breakers roaring. And he doesn't like that. Obviously, the plankton couldn't handle that, right? It's just too much to handle. So when one doesn't handle anything, one doesn't reach out at it. And if he doesn't reach out at it, then it reaches in wholly at him. And if this is the case, then this thing we call sleep results. So you'd say there's such a thing as a thetan sleep. This is just a re-stimulated thing because body's sleeping, he hadn't got anything better to do. Be such a thing as a body's automatic sleep, by which it merely takes a certain portion of the dark hours and believes it has to be comatose during that because there's no food because the sun isn't shining or something of the sort. But that is just pattern sleep. And then there's something else called aniten, which is body sleep while the thetan's still awake. And that's real aniten. A person who's experiencing analytical attenuation is actually sitting there unable to get through the fog which has settled down on the body. And it's a funny, funny experience. If you as an auditor think your preclear is all the way gone, you've made a mistake because he's perfectly alert usually. And he's just sitting back of all of these comatose ridges and he cannot make the body talk or move and he's just sort of looking at all of it. Well, now once in a blue moon, he will flick out for a moment. He'll have a little dream, a millisecond long or something of this character. He'll invert on this sleep basis himself. But what we refer to usually as aniten is the thetan still has some awareness. We tell somebody to mock up some blackness and push it into his body. Now, ordinarily, he will go to sleep underneath this impact in some fashion to all appearances. Well, actually, he's merely gone aniten. He's gone the. If you kept on repeating the auditing command, the thetan would keep doing it. And it's a very bad error not to continue to repeat the auditing command when it is of that type of command, when your PC is apparently aniten. You guys understand that? By the way, you'll never really permanently turn off anybody's blackness unless you run the process that way. Mock up some blackness and shove it in. We don't say to the body, we don't care what. Mock up some blackness and shove it in. Mock up some blackness and shove it in. PC usually in that kind of a condition where he has to have this thing done will after a while go aniten. The funny part of it is he keeps right on doing it if you keep on ordering it. He might not even remember it afterwards. But I have taken a careful check of this on e-meters and things like that, and the person does go right on doing it. And they come out the other side of all of this aniten, boil-off. Slight difference between aniten and boil-off too, by the way. A boil-off is a person who's just fogging through an awful lot of it, and it gradually sort of recedes. Boiling off is the action of aniten disappearing off the case. But a person can boil off for hours at a time. All right. Now, an individual then, in remedying having this having this remedied with blackness, will usually go aniten. And if the auditor keeps giving the auditing command, the preclear will come up on the opposite side of the aniten with clear visio and no more blackness, even though he didn't remember finishing it all the way through or not. Now, sometimes we have preclears who are chronically fogged up. We have them sit down in the auditing chair and it doesn't seem to matter what we do to them, they continue to be foggy and dopey and drift off and all of that sort of thing. This is the same mechanism. But the thetan is being very upset about this very often when the body keeps doing it and he is misowning it. And the only real difficulty he has, if you run him on CCH1, CCH2, and he does not respond, and this doesn't come out, and doesn't work off, then you can assume that he is misowning it. He thinks that he is doing something to the body, whereas the body is simply doing it. There's a misownership of the aniten there, but it will work off in any event, and simply asking him to reach out toward things, talk toward things, recall or think of things he could say or do to various individuals will gradually knock this aniten out. Aniten is something a thetan himself does when a thetan goes out. Only a thetan can turn off his own attention. The body really can't turn it off. Okay, you know what sleep is? It's the same manifestation, more or less, only it has a lot of tremendous conditions and training mechanisms and automaticities mocked up with it. It's quite ordinary for people to get along on less and less sleep in Dianetic Scientology. They don't have sleep as much. They sometimes make an awful effort, ho-hum. They make an awful effort, and they sometimes, just to hold up their reputations and so forth, don't sleep. And that's silly. That's silly. There's another oddity. You get going along a certain pace, and you've got it mocked up that you can go along under such and such a strain, and you mistake the strain for energy. And then one day this strain folds up, and you feel exhausted. I do this very often after Congress, quite amusing. I've been 4 days in there pitching like mad, you see. I get myself wound up. I can sleep all right. But I quite often mistake my ability to keep going for this mocked up and automaticity, see. It's just 4 days worth of it has been enough to get me wound up, see. And I have to sit down and differentiate between me doing it and using up the facsimiles of me doing it. Got the idea? If I don't restrain the body from running on the mocked up 4 days, it'll all of a sudden run those out into exhaustion. In 4 or 5 days, well, all of a sudden we'll feel terribly exhausted. Boom! Well, what happened is I just got going and I decided to burn it up on an automaticity, didn't pay any attention to it at all, and never sat down and readjusted. There's quite a change of pace in anything like that. There's changes of mass, numbers of people. Actually, the sudden loss of that many people at the end of the 4 days, the sudden acquisition of that many people at the beginning of the 4 days of a Congress, alike have their effects upon anybody who is handling that larger crowd. Now, sleep is a necessity to a psycho, and if somebody does not sleep and cannot sleep, he can be counted upon to get more and more and more agitated and to go up the spout further and further and further. He'll get in worse and worse condition if he can't sleep. When a psycho cannot eat and cannot sleep, he's had it. Don't process him. Don't process him. Got that? Your processing is going in on a complete below exhaustion, exhaustion that's probably even below degradation. The thing for you to do is to make them get something to eat and make them sleep. Got that? Don't keep auditing them. I'm telling you, I got experience on this, and there's lots of kids around who got lots of experience on this. We never look for a psychiatrist to give us any experience on this. That's for sure. He runs and everybody knows, you know. But they know that. They know that people, when they get crazier and crazier, why they at length get to a point where they cannot sleep at all, and this ruins them utterly. I'll tell you a good cure for this, for sleeplessness. This is an excellent cure for sleeplessness. Also an excellent cure for exhaustion. What's the difference? And that is, walk around the block until things start to look solid to you. Don't go on any method about it. Just walk around the block till things start to look. You say, now, wait a minute. You mean you're totally exhausted. You can't even drag yourself along, and you're supposed to go out and walk around the block. That's right. And the first two turns around the block, you know absolutely that the third turn is going to be so gruesome that nobody could possibly make it without putting one of these package trucks under his heels. He just couldn't do it. And somewhere about halfway along that line, all of a sudden things start looking solid, and the exhaustion goes, and you start coming upscale, and next thing you know, you feel nice and relaxed, and after a while, why, you can lie down and go to sleep. You got that? It's quite weird. I mean, an individual can get below the level of tiredness, you see, down to exhaustion, and that's a very definitely gruesome level to be at. The actual cure for it is walk around the block, as given in Problems of Work. It's rather terrific as a process, by the way. It's one of the better processes. But it is so simple that it's almost impossible to convince anybody that it is one of the better processes. If you're exhausted, you have no business getting very much auditing. One, you start sticking in the session. You get introverted. You find you're jumping at auditor code breaks, the like of which you never heard of. Thing that you should do is to go out and walk around the block. I know, you're tired. I know, walking around the block will make you more tired. That's all right. After you've been at it for a while, you'll run out and be able to walk around the block. I'd say if somebody was auditing all the time or sitting at a desk all the time, he'd be a fool not to walk around the block until he was no longer tired after he had finished work. Sounds real funny. You walk around the block, actually, until you're no longer tired, and then you can relax. And that is the best cure I know for sleep. Now, taking hypnotics, amifibinol, snoozol, drowsol, those things don't work. They don't work. I don't know what it is about them, but these sedatives have a kickback that don't give you very much about sleep. There isn't anything connected with sleep. They're hypnotics, and I don't care what anybody calls them, they're hypnotics. I was wondering what people were taking that you call this tranquilizer, so I took a couple of hands full and find out what was happening about him, so forth. And I, instead of going to sleep, as one was supposed to do, or feel relaxed, something of this sort. Well, I felt my eyes go snack and pow, and the diaphragms dilated like that, and I put the body in a chair and went over and sat on the molding for a while and let it get over it. It was just an hypnotic. It's an oddity that the medicos, the drug boys, by the way, this day and age, have too much money and buy too much advertising, that's for sure. Because these hypnotics and these various, quote, cures, drug cures for psychosis and neurosis and all these tranquilizers and all of that sort of thing, actually produce almost identical effects. They are all poisons. And any known poison can be administered in sufficiently small amount to be an hypnotic. There's a common denominator on this thing. You can take strychnine, and you can administer just enough strychnine to make somebody feel peppy. Well, that's a stimulant then, isn't it? Stimulant, obviously. Now you can give them just enough strychnine to make them dope off. Obviously, it's a depressant, isn't it? Now you can give them enough strychnine to kill them dead. Well, that's a poison, isn't it? Varenol works the same way. It, in various dosages, is a stimulant, a depressant, and a poison. Opium, same thing. So I think you could take grass and eat enough of it, and you would get a stimulant, a depressant, and a poison. But nobody has tried it because it's in bales. One bale would be a stimulant. But I actually did make this test on what they call rabbit pellets. And they press grasses into rather large solid pellets that they feed to rabbits. And they put these in sacks and sell them to people who have rabbits. Some people have circuits and others have rabbits. Anyhow, and we had people chomping on these around, and they did the same thing. They really did. You could take these pellets, which were pressed alfalfa, and you could do various weird things with these tablets. And it all amounts to how much strychnine is having this. See? Now, you've heard of the werewolves, haven't you? Close off this subject of speech. You didn't know it, you know, but a werewolf is somebody who turns into a wolf. You got that? He's a werewolf. Now, actually, they have such a thing as a were-tiger described in the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is somebody who turns into a tiger. During the night hours, instead of going to sleep like other people do, they turn into a tiger and roam around the countryside. That actually is people dramatizing a fear of thetans who can put bodies to sleep and then go for a walk. Well, anyway, werewolves are fascinating creatures because the only way a werewolf can be killed, of course, as everybody knows, is while lying in his coffin to have a stake put through his chest and driven home. Part of the original form, it was by a virgin at midnight. About the only women you can find out of bed at midnight are virgins. Anyway. I'm sorry to bring up these crudities, but... Anyway, werewolves, getting back on to serious technical subjects... the name of this subject, by the way, is lycanthropy, that branch of psychiatry which does not treat of anything else. And this business of roaming around while asleep and drinking blood and so forth goes over into vampirism and numbers of other things. These are just the things that go boom in the night that people keep mocked up to keep people in their heads at night. And there's quite an industry going on of things you mustn't do at night. Probably nightclubs and bars and that sort of thing are part of the same industry. They collect everybody into the nightclubs and bars so they won't roam around at night. You can always get a church to compose some night social group just to keep people from going out at night. It's all sorts of operations, Demeth, but there's a definite fear of things that roam in the night. Speaking of werewolves, you know, we've got a test mocked up about the silver bullet test. And it's supposed to be that a silver bullet kills a werewolf, too, you know. But the Lone Ranger's got all the silver bullets, and we haven't been able to get hold of any to carry out the test. Well, he definitely would like to know whether or not a silver bullet would kill a werewolf. Of course, plotting this the way they plot psychological experiments, why, it isn't necessary to find out if a werewolf exists or not before one makes tests concerning one. Always observe on a big via, and you got it made. Now, the subject of sleep is simply the retreat is the subject of how far can one retreat from being surprised. And you can actually make people very, very groggy by startling them. They get very agitated, and then they get very groggy. Now, if you can get a person sufficiently agitated, he won't sleep. So below sleep, there is no sleep. And below that, there is exhaustion. And below that, there's a hectic thing that we quite often call a manic state. And below that is degradation, which is a harmonic of exhaustion. And below that is, oh, to hell with it, let's exteriorize and go our way. Death. Death puts in its oar down below this point. When a body dies, or when somebody is killed suddenly with a great surprise, he passes through these lines so fast on the scale that he doesn't recognize them. But you start to run out of surprise, and you find each one of the steps I just gave you is there. First, all the steps are there jammed together, then each one articulates, and you bring him back on up. It's quite interesting, the one thing you have to know about sleep, definitely, that it's just the retreat from that. A person retreats, and it means can't handle. That's all it means. Sleep, can't handle. And the only thing you've got to be careful of is not to audit people who cannot sleep. A person who cannot sleep at all is dynamite. Now, how do you get them sleep? They cannot sleep. Well, don't audit them. Walk them around the block. Well, how do you get to sleep if you cannot sleep? Well, walk around the block. Well, how do you take a person in good shape and get them to sleep? Well, walk them around the block. Well, how do you get somebody who's all the way north? Exteriorized. How do you get him to sleep? I don't know. That's what this universe is all about. It tried to solve that problem, and look where we are now. Thank you. Thank you.